Hi everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, the Geek Show's dedicated comics, manga, graphic novel, graphic literature, and everything else graphic show. My name's Rob, and...
You might want to rethink that.
Yes. No, it's mosaics all the way. My name is Rob, not Mosaic, and joining me is the wonderful Andrew.
Yes, hello, that's me, that's who I is.
Yes, how are you today?
I am full of dust and plaster all in my lungs because we have decorators round.
Not vim and vigour?
No, not vim and vigour at all.
Yes, well, I'll explain that one later on.
We are a part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, and you can find us on the interwebs at geekshow.co.uk or get in contact at studio@thegeekshow.co.uk or info@thegeekshow.co.uk. You can also find us on YouTube, we're on Mixcloud, we're on Stitcher, we're on iTunes maybe, or in yes. the process of becoming
in
on,
the process.
One day we will be on iTunes.
Well, most of the uploads have been done. We just need to sort out the RSS feed and stuff like that, and then we'll be done.
Sweet. One day soon then.
Yes, it's very soon.
And of course, we are a voluntary organisation, so we do rely on the support of our lovely, lovely listeners. You can find links to our GoFundMe page or our PayPal donation thingy-majig on the website, or you can go to the Geek Shop, also on the website, and buy splendiferous items for your money. See, mixing it up.
Yep.
I was going to say lovely, but then I realised I would have said lovely for the listeners.
Cool. Right, okay, so let's get into the news.
Yes.
Starting off with Bleach, and Taito Kubo and Shonen Jump have announced that Bleach will be ending in less than 10 weeks. The manga, that is.
Which is a dirty, filthy lie, because Bleach will never end. It's like millions of years in the future. We will be at the heat death of the universe, and as the final stars fade out, Bleach will still be being written.
Well, just some statistics for you. Bleach is now in its 73rd volume, and the 74th volume will be the final one. The final story arc, though, has been going on since 2012.
Because, of course, it has.
Because, let's see, 2012. What year are we in now, 2016? February 2012, and if you say one chapter a week, that's 52 chapters, yeah?
Yep.
But, yeah, but say, take 2 weeks off from that for breaks for the author, yeah?
Yep.
So 50 chapters a year for 4 years, and now we're into what month are we in? July?
Yep, it is July.
July. So, let's work this out. So you're already 200... Jesus Christ! So around, what, 235 chapters to tell one story arc? I can tell an entire story in 235 chapters. I can tell an entire story in 5 chapters, never mind 235. And I understand that Bleach is a comic and the chapters are very, very, you know, there's 20 pages and they have to be drawn and everything like that. But did nobody ever listen to did nobody ever remember the phrase, a picture paints a thousand words?
My God, that's literally billions of words then.
Yep.
So what, the final issue is just going to end with the main character, like, throwing down a screaming sword, just, like, I'm sick of it. I'm sick of all of this. I'm going home.
See, I'd love it if that actually happened, if Ichigo just went, no, I refuse. You can't make me. You're not my real mum.
I've been doing the same goddamn thing for years now.
Yeah.
I just want a toilet break.
Right. At this current moment in time, I've forgotten how to even pronounce his name. Haywatch, Highwitch, Hiawatha.
Highway to the Danger Zone.
Yehovah. I don't understand how you're supposed to pronounce his name, but he's basically the leader of the Quincy. He's basically like the god of the Quincy kind of thing, and he's absorbed all the Quincy.
Quincy. Yeah, the Quincy.
So yeah, the Quincy, you know the guys who fire arrows, the like Ishida and people like that, they're all Quincy. But for me, because I grew up watching Quincy ME, you know, and so... Whenever they were mentioning Quincy, I was just imagining Quincy from the TV. And there was this weird superimposition going on in my brain whenever I read the manga or watched the anime. Just, you know, Ishida's supposed to be a high schooler, but he's got Quincy's head.
That's it. That's how Bleach continues. Actually, they're just ending it so that they can start all of it again, but replacing all the Quincy characters with just the head of Quincy ME.
Yes. Yes, I would go with this. It's got to the point where this Quincy leader, he's destroyed Soul Society. He's become God, effectively. He
is the ultimate Quincy.
He's the ultimate Quincy. He's the ultimate Shinigami. He sees the past, present, and future, and he can change them and control them at will. He's broken Ichigo's thing, sword, Zanpakuto, not the other thing. And then, you know, the Fullbringers? They somehow materialize. They turn up in Soul Society right at the end when Ichigo's all depressed and stuff because his Zanpakuto has been broken. You know, so obviously he's going to be depressed because he can't perform. And then they turn up. And one of the Fullbringers sticks his sword into Ichigo. And then all of a sudden, Ichigo's Zanpakuto is healed. And then Ichigo can perform again. Because euphemism is not a thing.
I have literally nothing I can add to that to make it any worse than it already is.
Oh, no. It gets worse. Then Ichigo and Abarai Renji, right, High Watcher, whatever his name is, he's created this hole in what's effectively time and space, and he's gone through, and he's gone somewhere else. And before the hole closes, you know, the Fullbringers turned up, one of them sticks a sword in Ichigo, Ichigo can now use his Zanpakuto, he can perform again as he always used to perform. And so him and Renji enter the hall and then have an emotional moment before exiting the hall, only to find that Sosuke Aizen and Haiwatch are having a bit of a set to. And then Haiwatch looks at Ichigo and says, "You're here, it's fixed. Well, no worries, I'll just break it again."
Oh, no. I don't know how it ends. This is not going to be pretty.
And I'll tell you something, right? It sounds like I'm purposely making it sound dirty, but that is literally what happens.
No, I've worked it out. The ending is actually just going to be a photo of the guy who writes it with the action figures of Ichigo and I did it my way. And just going, and now they kiss.
Yes. The circle of life. So, leaving that to one side, let's move on to Civil War.
Civil War.
Actually makes more sense.
It's not something I thought we would be hearing today. So, the big news is, it's a bit of a spoiler, but it's a big spoiler. But considering Marvel have spoiled it themselves, I think it's okay.
Yeah?
Bruce Banner be dead.
Yes, I know. Because it's part of what we're going to be talking about later on, but so we can go into more detail about it.
He got an uncomfortable case of arrows from Hawkeye.
Yes. Arrows that he made.
Yeah. Yeah, basically it was like he told Hawkeye, "This is a special arrow that will kill me if I ever go out of control again."
And Hawkeye is adamant that he saw green in Bruce's eyes. He says, Hawkeye, because the whole thing with that particular issue, a lot of it is basically the trial of Hawkeye.
Yes, after doing the murdering. Because Bruce Banner, the idea is he's sort of been cured, maybe.
Yeah, but he's not supposed to be experimenting on himself, and that's what he's been doing. But what people don't seem to understand is because he's been experimenting on himself, he's actually been able to control things because he understands. Nobody understands Bruce Banner's body more than Bruce Banner because he's the one who's been constantly fighting, often alone, to try and stop the Hulk.
Because you're going to talk about the issue itself a bit later on, so should probably save like the more details for later. But yeah, so...
So you set me off by saying it.
I did. I'm sorry. I'm reeling it back now.
Okay.
I've thrown the line in and just, I'm reeling it back. But yeah, he's dead. That's going to have... No, wait. I was going to say have some ramifications. But what it's going to do is change the Marvel Universe forever.
Yes.
Don't care.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, we have kind of a little bit of an idea of how things are going to change because Marvel also released kind of a checklist for Marvel Now, which I think is a lot of the stuff that's going to be coming out kind of from October onwards.
Yeah.
But I've also heard that that's not everything because there's quite a few conspicuous absences from this list. So I think first things first, it's okay. Most of the stuff we like is okay. There's still going to be Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, still going to be Hellcat, still going to be Squirrel Girl, still going to be Moon Knight, it's still going to be other things.
Yeah.
But what's new, what is new and looks very interesting is there's going to be a new Great Lakes Avengers series.
Really?
Yeah, and it is going to be written by Zach Gorman, who writes the Rick and Morty comics.
Ooh, now that sounds interesting.
Yes, so I'm excited for that one.
Great Lakes Avengers with a touch of Rick and Morty. I'm happy about this.
But yeah, but that's enough happiness.
Oh.
Because now we have to move on to the bad.
And what's the bad?
Do you know what other series they're making? Solo, Slapstick, and Fool Killer.
Sorry, what?
You know, everyone's favourite Marvel heroes. You know, Solo, that guy who's a bit like the Punisher, but no one cares about him. Fool Killer, who is also a bit like the Punisher, but no one cares about him. And Slapstick, who is a bit like the Punisher, but also Looney Tunes.
I don't understand why.
It's because they became part of Deadpool's mercs for money.
Oh, God.
And now they're getting a spin-off series.
Why? 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 Why?
Because Deadpool equals dollar sign.
It really is. It really is that 80s song that I introduced you to. You know, there ain't nothing going on but the rent, is there?
No, there ain't nothing going on but the rent.
Oh, I'm sorry, but I don't understand this. Deadpool, okay, fine, but I just think Deadpool has become so big now, and everybody is so in love with Deadpool that it's actually going to collapse under its own weight.
He's become Wolverine.
Yeah.
He's become overly popular.
Yeah.
To the point that, like, I'm starting to turn against him a bit. Like, I'm not keeping up with the Deadpool series. And I think the only thing I'm reading that he's in now is Spider-Man Deadpool.
Yeah, because it's the only interesting thing.
Yeah.
I mean, when you get right down to it, Deadpool has literally done everything that Logan's done and more, I suppose. Because Logan never... Well, actually, no. He's done everything that Logan's done because Logan did have to deal with the female version of himself, X-23. So, you know, Deadpool has... Well, although Logan has never had to deal with a dog version of himself, I suppose. But he is Wolverine, so I don't know. I just remember that Squirrel Girl bit.
Yes. Jonathan the Wolverine.
Yes. Sorry. So, Deadpool breaks the fourth wall, does all sorts of wacky stuff, everything like that, you know. But when you get right down to it, Deadpool's cute. Deadpool's funny, you know. You think you want to live with Deadpool. No, you don't.
Deadpool is like chocolate.
Yes.
Like, you like Deadpool, and one day you decide, why don't I just have Deadpool for every meal?
Yes.
But then it's too much Deadpool. So much Deadpool, you feel a bit sick.
Well, Deadpool will keep writing checks that your ass can't cash. It'll be like Deadpool has a permanent account at your ass bank.
Anyway, moving on.
I'm still a bleach one, aren't I?
yes, you are. So that's where the bleach comes in. Now it all makes sense.
Now we know why he's called Tite Kubo.
we can crawl back out the gutter.
Anyway.
Back onto the sidewalk. So, I forgot the other really cool thing that's happening. Jenna D. Tartakovsky's Cage miniseries is finally coming out.
Really?
Yeah. So that's going to be cool.
Remind me about the Cage series.
It's a bit of an unknown. It's going to be a 4-issue miniseries about Luke Cage.
Oh, that one.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Written and drawn
yes.
by him.
Sorry, I was getting a bit confused because when you said Jenna D. Tartakovsky, I'm thinking, hang on, is he saying Gendy Tartakovsky? Is it Gennady? Is it Gendy? I'm confused.
I think it might actually be Gennady because it's like G-N-N-E-D-Y.
See, I've always called him Gendy.
So if I have it now, I'll be mispronouncing it.
Okay, so it's...
Samurai Jackman.
Yes, that's what I was thinking of. Because when you said Cage, I was thinking, is this something to do with Samurai Jack?
No, it's... Unless it isn't completely unrelated. Oh my... Luke Cage and Samurai Jack teaming up...
Maybe they already did. Do you not remember the episode with the samurai?
Yeah. Yes. This entire thing is just going to be the samurai's origin story.
Because mama will knock you out. Anyway.
But anyway, the other thing I want to say is it's got the most hilariously unthought out tagline.
Oh.
Because this is a miniseries that's been delayed and delayed and delayed for years on end.
Yeah.
And its tagline is, Christmas comes early. No, it doesn't. It comes after many years of waiting.
And dreaming and hoping and more waiting and even more waiting.
Anyway, I think there's one final quite big thing that has my attention is there's going to be a new series called Champions.
Oh?
Champions being, I think they were a team from like way back in the 80s with like Black Widow and stuff.
Yes, they were, yeah.
But yeah, it's completely unrelated to that. What it's going to be is basically a bunch of young heroes. So you've got Teen Cyclops, Miss Marvel, Totally Awesome Hulk.
Teen Cyclops?
Yeah, from the X-Men with the whole bringing the X-Men from the past to the future.
Oh, right, so it's still Scott Summers.
Yeah, still Scott Summers.
Right, okay.
But like the teenage version of him. So him, Hulk, Miss Marvel, Spider-Man, Miles Morales, Nova, and the Vision's daughter from his series.
So it's basically Marvel's version of Teen Titans.
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting, though. There's basically them saying, "No, we are sick of all the adults and their constant fighting.
Yes.
Let's just show them how to be real heroes." I think that's a pretty neat concept for a book.
Yeah, I like that.
This is written by Mark Waid, and I do like myself some Mark Waid.
Yeah, but I'm wondering how much time is it going to be before it goes down the Teen Titans route? I'm hoping if it does go down the Teen Titans route, it's not the Teen Titans go. It's the actual, you know, the other Teen Titans.
Oh, no. Well, I think it's going to stay like an actual serious comic book.
Ah, that's good then.
It's not going to be like a sketchy thing.
So a bit more like Young Justice then.
Yeah. I think Young Justice is a good comparison.
Because Young Justice
kind of giving the middle finger to authority type thing.
Yeah, that series was hard done by. Because I really liked that series.
Yeah, God, I loved Young Justice.
You know, I thought this is what they should be doing with teenage superheroes in cartoons. They should be doing this more of this sort of stuff, not Teen Titans Go.
Yeah, Teen Titans Go.
Yeah. But anyway, yes.
Yeah, but the main thing that has me excited is hoping this is finally going to be like where Mark Waid stretches himself out. Cause I felt like I've been following his Avengers series, and it's felt a bit... Like, it's been fun, but it doesn't seem like it's going anywhere.
Okay,
and now it seems, I can look at this and say, it's probably because he knew he's been given the Avengers and, like, said, yeah, you have, like, a few months until we reboot continuity again.
So he's been constrained by that.
Yeah, and feels like he's kind of basically had to sort of build up a status quo so that it can get, like, thrown away.
Well, now he can stretch his wings a bit, hopefully.
Yeah, I hope so. So I'm looking forward to that.
Cool. Okay, we're going to take a break there, and we'll be back with some comics, starting with Civil War.
Yes.
Cartoons, they're not just for kids anymore, except the ones that are actually for kids, they're for kids. If you liked that, then tune in to Keyframe for more scintillating insights about the world of animation. Part of the Geek Show's podcast network, we'll tell you whether it's as good as Ghibli or just plain giblets.
Welcome back to Four Panel. Now we're going to be talking about what we've been reading, and what we've been reading is Civil War.
Yeah, Civil War. What a odd series it has been so far.
I mean, I think the question you could ask is, what is it good for?
Not much so far. I'll be honest, it's very, very lackluster.
Yeah, I have been disappointed.
The whole premise of Civil War is Minority Report. It really is just that.
Yeah, it is exactly Minority Report.
And Tony even has the whole, you know, the hand thingy with the screen and everything like that. He has that already. We know that. We've seen it in the Avengers movies. So he has that going on anyway. So it is effectively Minority Report. It's just missing a random Tom Cruise.
And a pool full of balls.
Yes, but we're not going to go there because this is not Bleach. Anyway, Civil War, you have on one side Captain Marvel saying, yes, we can change the future. We can stop these things happening. Pre-crime is a thing because it's not Minority Report.
Nope.
And then on the other side, you're saying Tony Stark, Iron Man, the futurist, the one who believes no future is set, everything can be changed, saying, no, we have to protect the future. We can't prosecute these people because these things haven't happened yet and they may never happen. And the weird thing is, I actually agree with Tony.
Yeah. Well, because as Minority Report itself taught us, that's right.
Well, it's not just as Minority Report taught us, it's basic common sense. Saying we arrested the guy who looked like he was going to do something is not as impressive as we arrested the guy who did it.
But to be fair, though, I think like the way well, apart from the Hulk thing, the way they've kind of used it, because it's less like taking out a criminal before they do a crime.
Yeah.
More saying like, okay, Thanos is going to attack here, but now we've got advance warning, so let's all go set up there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing that makes sense to a degree, but when you push it to the extreme, like Civil War is doing, and you start targeting specific people saying, this is going to happen, this is going to happen. Because, I mean, by the third issue, we mentioned this already, Bruce Banner is dead.
Yeah, right? that's where it gets like into sketchy Minority Report territory.
Yeah, Bruce Banner is dead, killed by Hawkeye, and Hawkeye has basically turned up, and they have this Ulysses, the Inhuman who can see the future, and they called him Ulysses for some reason, right? Don't know why, but I reckon there's some weird connection thing going on there that it hasn't actually been explained yet.
Well, actually, I think what it was I heard a rumor that the original name they were planning on giving him is Homer, as like some sort of bard thing. But then people complained that was a bit too much on the nose.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, so I can see what you mean. My problem with Ulysses, though, is as a character, he's just so very, 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 very shallow.
Yeah, well, he's not a character, he's a plot device.
Yeah, and that's one of the main things that I don't like about Civil War. They haven't made him a character at all. He is just there. He's just a thing. He's like the back computer.
Yeah, he is an object to be fought over.
That's it. And I don't like that because it's like Marvel have suddenly taken a step back from thinking about how they're going to do these stories and gone, you know, Minority Report was a thing. We could steal that idea.
I think my problem is like what you mentioned earlier is them taking this to extremes.
Yeah. Why? Like,
yeah, it's because they want them to fight.
Yeah.
When any rational human being would like have a sit down and say, well, yes, I can see the advantages of having an early warning system. But perhaps we should consider this moral argument.
Well, the thing
is, Hal Danvers going, "Why, yes, Tony, that's a good point. Let us calmly and rationally discuss this like goddamn adults."
Right. This is the point. This is the point. Exactly what you just said. Right. Tony Stark, futurist, businessman, philanthropist. Right. And would rarely be the first person to throw the punch. Right. Because we've seen it in Iron Man constantly. He's the first person to open his mouth and talk.
Yeah.
Because that's what he does best. What he does best is not being Iron Man. What he does best is negotiate.
Yeah, because he's a businessman.
Yeah. Carol Danvers, military, all that military training, but she's an officer. She's not a grunt. So her first reaction in any given situation is to think, not to shoot. And yeah, these are like, the two leaders of the opposing sides.
Neither of them should be people who just accept either side as being entirely right without any thought of compromise.
Exactly. And they don't accept either side is right, but they don't ever sit down. I mean, they sit down and talk about things, but they don't. They don't actually talk about them. There's no actual in-depth, real discussion about the controversy around Ulysses, about what Ulysses actually represents. Is he a good thing or a bad thing? Should they use his power or not? And how should they use his power? How should they use his abilities?
Yeah, yeah, that argument is, well, I think we should use it. I think we shouldn't. I think you're a poopy butthead. I think you're a poopy butthead. Let's do the punching.
Yes. You know the little Avengers versus X-Men?
Yeah.
It's basically that.
It is exactly that.
And it's basically just wipe the slate clean and, oh, we can get rid of this character, and then we'll bring these characters in, like Spot the Dog and, you know, Fool's Errand and whoever else. And I don't care. Just go away. Civil War 2. The only good thing about Civil War 2, literally, so far, the only good thing about Civil War 2 has actually been Bruce Banner talking to Hawkeye and convincing Hawkeye to take the shot.
Yeah, because that is the thing Bruce Banner would do.
Yeah, it's exactly Bruce Banner. It's so Bruce Banner, it actually hurts a little because, as I said before, nobody understands Bruce Banner's body better than Bruce Banner. He's lived with the Hulk for a long, long time. He's done every single thing he can think of to try and control the Hulk, to try and change his fate, to try and prevent people getting hurt. And the thing that gets me about Bruce Banner is he is the tragic character in all of this. He was way, way, way out of the way at his secret lab that no one knew about. He was away from population centers. There was nobody else around. So even if he did turn into the Hulk, no one was going to get hurt. And yet, because of Ulysses, they came and found him.
Yeah, which, yeah, I hope, like, I mean, I don't have high hopes for Civil War, but I think it could be really good if that's the kind of thing they started going more into.
Yeah.
Like, this idea, this only became a problem because we saw the Vision. It's been like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, and that's my point. You know, if they go down that route where the Vision actually creates that future and actually trying to prevent that future creates that future. Because they keep saying, oh, we prevented this and we prevented this and we prevented this, but, you know, because the idea that they had with Banner was that the Hulk was going to go nuts and start, and loads of people were going to get hurt, right?
Yeah.
Which is why they went after Banner. And Hawkeye was adamant that he saw Banner's eyes flash green as if he was going to turn into the Hulk. And so he took the shot. And the whole third issue is basically the trial of Hawkeye. And Hawkeye, very open and honest, he says, look, he came to me, told me this, gave me this, I used it because I saw his eyes flash green. You guys didn't see it. My eyes are trained to do this. I saw his eyes flash green. But it keeps cutting to the panel where Banner is getting angry and his eyes are brown.
Yeah, I see.
Do you see what I mean?
I do. I like that ambiguity.
You know. And so the question is, did Hawkeye actually see green or not? And what does this mean for this whole idea of change in the future? Did an innocent man just die because they tried to change the future?
Is interesting things we're never going to really find out.
No, probably not. Because
issue 4 is going to be Tony Stark going, I am upset now, punchy times.
Yeah, because issue 4 is literally... the third issue ends with a particular thing that confused me a little bit, right? Because you have... whatever Tony Stark's computer is called now, you have that, and it's analyzed Ulysses' power, his ability, and it's produced the results. And Tony Stark and MJ are just like, well, that was unexpected. You know, so I'm not sure how Tony Stark has a computer powerful enough to analyze the ability of an inhuman and, you know, and actually say how it works, that sort of thing, or no, reproduce it.
It's okay, Rob, because in issue 2 he did a science on him.
Yes, I
and
know.
And now the science is scienced properly. He can science an answer.
But surely if he can do that, he can do that with the Hulk. Do you see my problem with this?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
If you can do that with Ulysses, whose power is ephemeral, right? Surely you can do that with the Hulk and find a cure for Bruce Banner, then he doesn't have to die.
Well, even Jim, because I'm going to talk about the Hulk tie in a minute.
Yeah.
But in that, they do a scan on him and say, yeah, there's no gamma radiation in your body.
Yeah.
You're all good. Just do that again. Oh, what's that? We've seen that the Hulk might go a bit crazy. Hey, do you know what we should do, guys? We should all go provoke him right now. That is a great solution. That's a frustrating comic, Rob.
Yeah, I know. And it gets more confusing.
Because of course it does.
Because you have all of the spin-offs, all of the tie-ins, everything like that. Lots and lots of Civil War. Even Thanos makes an appearance.
Yeah, which... I'm not really sure why they bothered using Thanos. You could have replaced him with any other villain whose place is much easier to explain.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on to Gods of War. Civil War. Gods of War. And in Gods of War, it centers around Hercules, and I think Hercules is a tremendously underused character in Marvel.
Yeah, I like Hercules.
Right.
Look, interesting, it looks like he's going to be a part of the new Avengers lineup.
Well, he was part of Avengers originally. But
but I mean, he's gone back to the Avengers, it seems.
That'll be a good move for him, I reckon. I reckon he needs to be a part of the Avengers. He needs that camaraderie, he needs that friendship, because he's not a loner.
Well, you said, do you know who else is joining the Avengers, though?
Who?
The new Iron Man.
What, the woman?
No, don't be silly. No. Which, actually, yeah, there's another thing I forgot about it. 15-year-old girl Iron Man, sure, why not? But no, the other new Iron Man, Doctor Doom.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that happened.
Yep, that's a thing.
Yeah. Anyway, back to Gods of War. Right, Gods of War is basically Hercules and his mythical running buddies. Right? He's got Gilgamesh and Aya and various other people crashing at his flat. And it starts off with him and Totally Awesome Hulk with Amadeus Cho in a pub or in a bar, and the barman's trying to say to Amadeus, "You can't drink here." He's like, and then he turns into Hulk and says, "I'll have a root beer," kind of thing. So Hercules has a problem, right? A very, 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 very big problem.
Yes, alcoholism.
A massive problem. By the way, I found out what happened to She-Hulk.
Oh, cool.
Thanos happened to She-Hulk.
Oh, yeah. No, that's what I meant when we were talking about earlier. Yeah. Because she was injured as well in the fight, and I mean, it's been a bit ambiguous whether or not she died from her injuries.
She's alive as far as I know.
Right.
I think it's the first or second issue of Civil War. Carol Danvers actually says she's alive. So it's pretty categorical that she's alive, but I don't know why. I can't remember what happens after that because I kind of lost interest.
No, because like, I remember at the end of the first issue,
yeah,
she flatlines.
Oh, yeah, she does, doesn't she?
Yeah, but then no one ever says, like, she's dead. They always be, like, quite vague. And then that thing happened to Jen.
Yeah, I remember. Moving on to Gods of War. Back to Gods of War, I should say. Yeah. Hercules has a big, 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 big ass problem. And that problem is a green handprint on his right shoulder. It's not Gamma, before you say anything.
No, I was just going to say, he had a bit of a night out at the club.
Yeah, it kind of is and isn't. See, Hercules is up against these gods of chaos, right? And they're being led by a god called Cryptomnesia. Now, Cryptomnesia is a very odd soul, and he has a couple of friends of his relatives, friends, whatever you want to call it. Catastrophobia is one of them, you know, and another one, I can't remember her name, but they end up in a fight. See, Hercules leaves his apartment, and all of a sudden there's like some cosmic war going on. Hulk's there, She-Hulk's there, everybody's fighting against this thing in the sky. There's like Inhumans and Ultimates and Avengers and X-Men and everybody.
Is this the thing from the start of Civil War?
Yes. Right. And Hercules is there, and Hercules is fighting against these chaos gods, but no one can see the chaos gods. And everyone thinks Hercules is just punching thin air. So they're all like, yeah, don't worry, we got this, Hercules. You just take a rest, because they think he's hallucinating. Problem is, he's not. His friends, the other legendary beings, can actually see these chaos gods. But normal superheroes, normal mortal heroes, can't.
Okay, but see, the problem that immediately springs to mind there then is, but what about, like, Doctor Strange?
See, Doctor Strange would probably be of help, but Hercules hasn't gone to him.
No, but I mean, surely the other heroes can just be like, Hercules says there's a crazy chaos god standing right over there. Is he saying the truth? Doctor Strange would be like, yep, there's a big-ass chaos demon. Or even Thor. Surely Thor can see them as well.
Yeah, Thor would be able to see them, but the problem that Hercules has got right now, right, is that he's doubting a lot of himself and his place in the world of heroes. And you know that teenage angst thing where you might have a problem, but you worry about talking to somebody about it?
Yeah.
Because, you know, what if they don't understand, or what if they think it's something else, or what if they belittle you for it, or what if they just walk away and they don't want anything to do with you? Hercules is going through a bit of that. And he doesn't know how to deal with it. And this is one of the reasons why I say Hercules is a very underused character. Because the only people who can see these chaos gods are the other legendary beings. And yes, he could go to Thor and he could go to Doctor Strange. But he's worried because they're so high profile and he's kind of fallen off the radar.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't... I mean, like, the other heroes could go to them, though.
Thing is...
like, verify Hercules' stories instead of just assuming he's a bit mental.
The other ones that he has to rely on are even further off the radar than him. Who's sitting in his house? Gilgamesh, of all the people. Ire. Who the hell knows Ire? Except for Hercules. And Gilgamesh is not your usual house guest. In the second issue, you know, he makes some phone calls to get some help to help him fight the Chaos Gods. And the people he has to call are characters like Sigurd and Beowulf and Theseus, who apparently can charm any woman into his bed. And Beowulf and Theseus hate each other. They really do. Even Sigurd is asking why the hell Theseus is there. He's just a pretty face and not much else. So, yeah, there's that.
Yeah, take that, Theseus.
And then the Chaos Gods appear. And the end of issue 2 is literally Hercules going a bit Hulk because of this green handprint. And I don't mean he actually turns into the Hulk. I mean, this handprint is a curse. It will drive him mad and turn him into a chaos god.
Mm.
And I don't quite understand yet why this is part of Civil War.
I think Marvel kind of going back to their bad old ways of just slapping a Civil War 2 tie-in on anything.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, with two issues in, it doesn't quite make sense why it's part of Civil War. It's not very good.
It seems like they're using that very loose because that thing from Civil War happened in the first issue.
Yeah.
Therefore, it's a Civil War tie-in.
Yep, basically. Anyway, moving on to you then.
Moving on to a Civil War tie-in that makes a lot more sense.
Yep.
Is issues 7 and 8 of Totally Awesome Hulk. So these two issues, they follow Bruce Banner. So kind of after the start of the series, Amadeus Cho basically cured him of being the Hulk, took on the Hulk for himself, and now Bruce is kind of trying to adjust to a life without the Hulk in it. So it starts off, basically, he wakes up kind of half naked in the middle of the desert, as always, finds a bar, kind of steals some clothes, and runs into the guy whose clothes he stole, gets into a bar fight, and kind of, as the guy's about to throw the first punch, he kind of curls up into a ball on the floor screaming, no, no, I don't want this to happen, only to realise that there's nothing. He's not going to turn into the Hulk.
Yeah.
And so from there, he just kind of starts running around doing all the things he could never do as the Hulk. He gets a car, starts driving into the desert, and there's like this bit where it says, I accidentally pushed down on the gas too hard. Nothing happens. I push down harder. And you just see him like racing through the desert, wind through his hair, just laughing like a maniac.
See, it's interesting that that's one of the things he does, because that's kind of a throwback to the very first issues of Totally Awesome Hulk.
Yeah, because I was going to say, because they do like a direct throwback where kind of he bounces off a rock and the boot flies open.
Yeah.
And he just says, there's nothing in the trunk.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. So then he breaks down kind of in the middle of the desert, kind of goes on a whole wacky adventure, has to run away from a bear, winds up in Vegas doing some gambling, and then the mood whiplash hits because Iron Man flies in.
Yeah.
And kind of asks, Bruce, I need you to tell me something. Are you trying to kill yourself?
Wow.
Because what you're doing, you're running around, putting your life in danger. Are you actually just trying to get yourself killed because you can't live with the guilt of everything the Hulk's done? And Bruce just ends up breaking down. Like, has this whole moment of saying, yeah, the Hulk did all these bad things, but the Hulk is me. It's my anger. I'm responsible for all this chaos.
Well, it's not just that. In the Civil War issue that I was talking about, the one where Banner actually gets killed, it's actually, because it's already been established, Banner gets flashes of what the Hulk's done.
Yeah, and he does actually have some flashes in this. Like, you see, just a bit of him generally wrecking through cities. There's a flashback to World War Hulk.
Yeah.
But I think what I really like as well is the bit that comes after it.
Yeah.
It's kind of Tony saying, like, Bruce, you have to forgive yourself. And he says, I'll work on it, but I've got an even harder problem. And Tony asks, what's that? Bruce just turns around and yells, forgiving you and every other stupid, puny human. And just starts ranting that, yeah, he knows he's caused all this chaos. But time and time and again, he told them he wants to be left alone, and no one ever did.
Yeah.
And like, he just starts screaming, and Tony steps out of the armor and says, okay, Bruce, I understand. If you want a shot, you can take it. And then you see Bruce start breaking down sobbing and just hugs Tony.
See, that's nice.
Yeah, it's really powerful emotional stuff. And then it gets even more so in issue 8. Because basically this takes place a little bit later. So we're going to catch up with Amadeus Cho, who's quickly running to the aid of Bruce Banner, whose vitals are going crazy off the charts. Everyone's worried, oh no, has it all starting to come undone? And to find that what Bruce has done is infected himself with influenza.
Really?
Yeah, because basically as a test, because when he was the Hulk, he couldn't get sick.
Okay. Yeah, this is true, yeah.
Yeah, so now kind of just to test that he's truly better, he deliberately gives himself the flu.
See, that's actually quite genius.
Yeah.
Something that he knows he can recover from and isn't going to kill him. That's really clever, I like that.
Yeah, it's a smart move. But anyway, what happens is he eventually faints and wakes back up.
Hmm.
And he's kind of in one of his secret bunkers and just wakes up to find Amadeus and Maddie Cho arguing over a big pot of garlic soup, yelling over how many cloves of garlic need to be in it. Amadeus say, oh yeah, put like 30 cloves in. And he's screaming, but Mom only ever used like 5. And it's just this really nice issue, like them. And then She-Hulk and Rick Jones show up as well.
See,
and it's just like, it's the entire Hulk family looking after Bruce.
See, that's nice.
It is, it's really nice.
I like that.
Yeah, kind of, it gets to a bit later. They're all sitting around a table playing cards. It's just, it's nice to see them all, like, be in a family.
Well, it's, of all the heroes, of all the characters in the Marvel Universe, the only ones that Hulk has ever been comfortable with, Rick Jones, She-Hulk, Betty Ross, Amadeus Cho, when you get right down to it, he's the only new addition. But She-Hulk, basically, it's his cousin. Hulk knows that, you know, She-Hulk is probably the only one of the superheroes who is always looking out for him, although he has hit her a couple of times.
Yeah, but what's that between superhero cousins?
Well, she hit back.
Exactly.
You know?
And like, it's just, there's so many really nice moments.
Yeah.
Like, this one bit is actually, it's genius, because Maddie Cho, Rick Jones and She-Hulk are sitting around the table playing cards, ask Bruce to come and join in, but he says, no, I'm fine, kind of just resting here, and he's on his laptop.
Yeah.
And Rick's all, oh, Bruce, trying to save the world again. But no, he's playing Minecraft. It just seems like a funny little joke.
Yeah.
But then he talks about it a bit more, and you realize what a genius idea it is, because he likes to play it on peaceful. And just, is that not Bruce Banner's ideal world, where he can walk around creating stuff, and there's no violence?
Yeah, because when you get right down to it, how often have we seen, regardless of whether it's Banner or Hulk, especially when it's Hulk, though, how often have we seen Hulk just land somewhere and just stop and look around? How often have we seen Hulk actually admiring nature? You know, he sees an animal and the animal looks at him and Hulk just looks back and he doesn't attack.
Yeah, well, that's always been what calmed the Hulk down.
Yeah, it was just nature itself.
Yeah, just being able to get away from people and enjoy some nature.
Yeah, and if people would just let him do that.
Yeah, and then you've got a lovely bit of just Bruce asleep, like a nice contented smile across his face and kind of She-Hulk tucking him in.
That's sweet.
It is, it's really sweet. Just like, just says, I've never seen him so, what's the word? And then Rick just sips and says, happy. Like, you see the tears kind of starting to well up in She-Hulk's eyes. But then they realise that Amadeus, he's run off somewhere and he's gone a bit wacky. He's kind of turned into the Hulk, trying to punch his way out of the big like metal vault that the Hulk would lock himself in.
Yeah.
And like, they kind of work out, you know, what's going on with him. And basically it's the real reason that Amadeus brought Bruce to the bunker is he's a bit worried about how he's been blacking out. And that he might not have as much of a handle on the Hulk as he thought.
Yeah, I see.
But now seeing Bruce like so happy and content, he doesn't want to burden him with it.
Yeah.
But eventually he does. And of course, Bruce has already worked out that's why he wanted to talk to him, because he is a smart guy.
Yeah.
And he basically reassures Amadeus, makes this nice metaphor about basically being drunk.
Yeah.
That he says, you know, my Hulk was always so angry because I've got a lot of anger deep down inside me, but you don't. So you don't have anything to worry about. And it just kind of ends with them sitting on a cliff, staring out into the desert.
So that's a nice picture. Old Hulk and young Hulk.
Oh, no, that's not the end. Because then it goes a bit later on to them sitting down and having some snoop. And Amadeus has caught Bruce's cold.
Oh, I like that. I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah, I think even just the very last bit of just Bruce kind of wandering around the desert, looking nice and content. You get the title of the story, which is just Peace in Our Time.
Yeah. It's weird because that's kind of reflected in Old Man Logan. That sort of thing is actually reflected in Old Man Logan, because what you have in Old Man Logan, because moving straight on, it's a great segue. It's a great way to follow on, because Old Man Logan, what you have obviously Logan has come back in time from 50 years in the future, right? And the world has basically gone through whatever apocalypse. It's a post-apocalyptic world. Everybody is a lot more savage. It's basically Mad Max, right?
It's more like Fallout, isn't it?
Well, Mad Max, Fallout, post-apocalyptic world type scenario. Yeah, it is a lot more like Fallout, yeah, I suppose. But Logan's got a family at that point, but they're all murdered. And so he goes back in time and he's determined to kill the people who killed his family before they kill his family, kind of thing, because logic, instead of thinking, I need to stop whatever happened to the world, I'm going to kill these people instead.
Well, no, to be fair, he does try and do that to start with.
He does try and do that to start with.
He's got his hit list of, like, the main people in charge of breaking the world.
Yeah, but also those are the main people who were responsible for the death of his family. It's just happy coincidence that the two things tie together, but his main driver is revenge for his family, not save the world, because it's Logan. And Logan is Logan feels a lot more than a lot of other heroes, because he's been through a lot more than a lot of the other heroes. And a lot of what Logan's been through has been pretty bad. You know, it's been pretty bad stuff. I mean, he wasn't treated nicely by Weapon X.
No, he was not.
You know, he's seen like the darker side of human nature a lot more than he's seen the lighter side. So for him, having a family and raising kids was basically, even if the world had broken, it was a little bit of heaven. Do you see what I mean? So for him, losing that means a lot more to him than saving the world. And that, because the thing is, that's something that he always goes back to, is his family.
Yeah, and I like how you kind of like sort of trying to save both his families.
Yeah.
Because one of them was Mysterio as well. It was like the guy who made him kill the X-Men.
Yeah. And this latest issue is kind of a healing issue. It's very odd because you have Jean Grey, minus the Phoenix Force, I think, taking him around to various places using Cerebral Sentinel, whatever it is.
Yeah, this is like teenage Jean Grey, isn't it?
Yeah, taking him around to various places that he remembers, you know, this person died here, this person died here, this person died here. But his memory's different because that place hasn't been destroyed. And then they go to the mansion, you know, the Institute, and he remembers how Jubilee died. And obviously, Wolverine and Jubilee have always been close.
Yeah, they've had that kind of father-daughter-type relationship.
You know, he remembers what happened and how Jubilee died that night. And then the last bit is just Jean Grey takes him to just a random place, and inside you've got Steve Rogers and Jubilee and the rest of them, and they're all alive and healthy. And she says to him, you don't have to do this alone. You still have all of us. We're still here.
Oh, see, this isn't the most recent issue. This is a while ago.
Was that a while ago?
Yeah, yeah.
I've only read issue 8. I'm only up to issue 8.
No. Well, I think I might be getting mixed up with when they, like, showed him what happened to their version of him.
Oh, yeah.
Like, with this, you're already dead in this universe. This isn't your timeline.
Yeah. That's already happened. I think, wasn't that issue 7? Okay, slight confusion there. I'm getting confused. You're getting confused.
Yeah, because I think the problem with Old Man Logan is it's had like two storylines with him deciding, I'm going to start killing bad guys.
Yeah, because they did have a different Old Man Logan series a while ago, didn't they?
No, I mean, the start of it, because basically this series started with him deciding, like, he made a list of, like, Mysterio and the Red Skull.
Yeah.
It was all, I'm going to kill all of them and stop the bad future from happening.
Yeah.
But then Steve Rogers was all, but see, you're already dead in this timeline and you didn't die in your timeline, so this is a different timeline.
Oh, yes, they did that. That was it. That was early on when he actually fought against Steve Rogers.
Yeah, yeah. And then, like, you had the whole storyline with him finding the younger version of his wife in Alaska.
Yeah.
But then he got attacked by the Reavers, and then he decided, okay, I'm just going to kill all my villains instead.
Because he cut off What's-Her-Face's arms, Lady Deathstrike's arms.
Yeah, he sliced off her arms and then stabbed her in the gut.
But yeah, that whole bit that you're talking about is actually, I think it's a second or third issue, is when he has that conversation with Steve Rogers.
Yeah.
While he's fighting Steve Rogers.
Yeah, I think it might be third, maybe even fourth issue.
Possibly, but because when he meets Steve in the latest issue, he says no hard feelings, and Steve goes no hard feelings, because Steve understands. Steve's probably the only person who understands what it's like to be out of time.
Yeah, yeah. Or maybe Cable as well.
Well, Cable's kind of here and there, you know.
Is that, I imagine Cable is just like really confusing to talk to.
Yeah, he's. I often worry about Cable, because if Cable ever had kids, right, it'd be really confusing given how much he jumps around in time. It's like Bishop, right?
Yeah, God, can you imagine that version of How I Met Your Mother?
Oh, God, no. Yes. I met your mother in 1692 and 1784 and in 1066 as well. What?
Oh, no, come on, let's go visit the grave of Grandma Jean, who's actually the clone of your real grandma Madeline, who became an evil goblin queen.
Yes. So I accidentally married your. I married your great 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 grandmother.
And that's why your eyes are too far apart.
No, no, no. And then I accidentally married your great 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 grandmother. And then accidentally married your great great grandmother.
And then went back in time and stood in a butterfly, and that's why your brother Timmy doesn't exist anymore.
Yes. I'm not a redneck. Because that could theoretically happen. For Bishop and Cable and all the other time travels, they could literally marry somebody in the distant past and then marry the descendant of that person, who is their descendant, and then marry their descendant as well. It's like the Doctor... You know, the Doctor's daughter, the blonde woman, who he actually got married to in real life,
yeah.
Which wasn't creepy at all.
like, that happened. Well, we've already got that, because we have Steve Rogers dating the niece of his World War II girlfriend.
Yes, I know.
No, bad Steve.
So, yeah.
And yet everyone is surprised he secretly works for Hydra. He's always been a skeevy guy.
So, anyway, yeah. Old Man Logan, the latest comic, aside from the confusion between us about who said what, Old Man Logan, the latest issue, is a very, very healing issue. I liked it a lot because it was showing Old Man Logan that finally, once and for all, he understands he's not in his original world. He has a chance to change things. He has a chance to make a difference. The chance that he didn't get before, he has that chance now.
That is interesting. I like Old Man Logan.
I like him as well, because originally when I heard of Old Man Logan, I was thinking, get off my lawn!
Which we're not saying that wouldn't be an equally amazing series.
Yeah, I know. These pesky kids with their rap music and their backwards hats. And you know,
and
those...
their ex-jets and their time travel.
Do you know the sad thing, right? That is actually a thing in Old Man Logan, because you have the, you know, the teenage hulks, as they, or whatever you want to call them. And they're, like, really violent, and they're a gang. But they are pesky kids with their backwards hats.
Damn kids with your backward caps and your boomboxes and your gamma radiation.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm Dylan Horrocks, a cartoonist from New Zealand, and you're listening to The Geek Show.
This is Andy from Literary Lightroom, telling you to go and listen to us, where we literally loiter about everything literary, with far too much loitering.
Next, I've got the Spider-Gwen annual,
oh,
which was actually terrific.
Oh.
Because it was basically Jason Latour kind of just having an opportunity to have all the fun he wants.
Cool.
So it's all written by Jason Latour, but it's got art by lots of different people. So you've got Chris Brunner, Emmy Lennox, Chris Visions, Olivia McGrath, and then all of them kind of coming together. So it's a bunch of different stories. First one is Spider-Gwen Week 1, which is kind of a bit of a Spider-Gwen origin story.
Okay.
And I like it because it's kind of set during the wrestling match.
Yeah.
Which is obviously like a parallel to Peter Parker's wrestling match in the main universe.
Yeah.
So it's Spider-Gwen versus the Savage She-Hulk. Because She-Hulk in this universe is a wrestler. And not only is she a wrestler, she's a heel.
Really?
Yes. But like the most obvious fake heel.
Yeah.
Because she's doing this thing for charity. And like she eventually gets beaten by some random person. And you just see her lying on the floor going, oh no, now I guess all that money is going to have to go to charity. So yeah, we get the wrestling match. And Peter Parker's actually in the audience watching, but he's a bit embarrassed because the person sitting next to him is getting far too into it.
Is that Gwen?
No, no, no.
Oh, Uncle Ben.
Yes, Uncle Ben is a massive wrestling fan. So basically, Spider-Gwen, she is sneaking around sort of backstage in her proto costume. It's basically like a white hoodie and a Mexican wrestling mask. And she comes across a janitor. It was basically not really a janitor. He's the guy who snuck in to rob everything.
Yeah.
And Spider-Woman has a dilemma. Does she chase after the robber or does she go to the match? Like, she starts imagining what happens as she goes to the match. And She-Hulk is so impressed that they team up and become celebrities. Like, they have thumb wars and they're on the cover of Wrestle magazine, starring the hip cop film Green Steel, Blue Steel. But no, she eventually chases after the robber, just in time to find him pointing a shotgun at Uncle Ben's head. And so she dives in, kind of smacks the gun out the way, and then Uncle Ben gives him a good sock to the jaw.
Okay.
And basically, kind of, this is the moment where Spider-Gwen realized she's meant for bigger things than just wrestling. And so she kind of hugs Uncle Ben and says, "I'm so sorry, I almost didn't come. What would we do without you?" Like, kind of, that's the moment she decides to become a superhero. So then she runs off. And then you just see Uncle Ben, and like the janitor guy starts to get back up. He just kind of, he looks left, looks right, and then just does like an elbow drop on the bad guy.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Then we have an extract from The Forgettable Foes of Spider-Woman, and it asks you a question.
Really?
Well, first of all, it establishes that, as everyone knows, anyone who catches a falling koala is bound by Australian law to raise it. I mean, that's basically legal knowledge. But tell me, Rob, what happens if that koala is raised to be lawless? Introducing Spider-Man's greatest foe, Koala Commander, with his trained team of attack koalas.
What?
Yes. It's great. You just see Spider-Gwen in like the middle of a street full of koalas saying, "Never thought I'd say it, but too many koalas." And Koala Commander himself is great. He's basically Cobra Commander, but with fluffy ears on the side of his helmet.
Oh.
And that's not even the greatest villain in this comic.
Oh.
Because we also get an adventure with Spider-Gwen talking to Captain America, who in this universe is Samantha Wilson.
Okay.
And she was part of World War II. She became Captain America in World War II. But then while stopping at Adam Zola, got sent to an alternate dimension.
Yeah.
Basically spent years kind of going through the multiverse before arriving back in Spider-Gwen's dimension. So we see one such adventure with her confronting Baron Blood, who wears a lot of purple. In fact, you could almost say he rules in a purple rain. Baron Blood is Prince. He's Prince. Which is like the you know, the purple jacket with the no shirt on.
With the frills and everything. Oh, God. Oh.
And Spider-Gwen is just asking, "But Captain America, how did you refuse his charms?" And she kind of gets like a faraway look in her eyes and says, yeah, refused. But anyway, the point is, Spider-Gwen is showing Captain America all these old comic books that got made by a guy called Steve Rogers.
Yeah.
With Captain America realizing, but somehow these are all exactly what my adventures were. So she goes to see Steve. You kind of get this nice moment of him saying he had these dreams of all these things that Samantha was doing, and so he made them into comics to kind of keep her legend alive. And that's a nice moment. But then she goes on another adventure to fight MODAK, mental organism designed as America's king.
Okay.
And he's, you know, he's the traditional MODOK. He's kind of a big face in a chair.
Did he have a top hat and a cane? And offered to build a bridge over San Francisco Bay Area?
Oh, you wish, Rob. No, we find him. He's building his base using Mexican labor.
Oh, God.
And and there's a tiny bit of yellow hair coming from the top.
I've seen this, yes.
It's Donald Trump MODOK. He starts screaming about how he's going to stop Captain America with his mighty giant hands. But his hands are tiny.
You know what that's a reference to, don't you?
Well, yeah, it's Donald Trump and his gigantic hands.
No, the giant hands thing. Do you know what that's a reference to?
Well, yeah, he's obsessed with the size of his tiny hands.
Because somebody actually said that about him before.
And he went completely over the top obsessed. So then we'd get another story with just Gwen and the Mary Janes hanging around the apartment.
The Mary Janes?
Yeah, which is the band she's part of. Frontlined by Mary Jane Watson.
Okay.
And just their version of the Watcher is there.
Okay.
Just in the corner, desperately waiting for something to happen. And he decides that the situation is dire, so he must break his sacred vows to interfere. Like, knocks a flyer onto a cat with, above the band's thing on, and they look at it and go, "Oh, yeah, we should do this, but nah, can't really be bothered." It ends up with him just appearing in front of them, just begging them, saying, I've watched you for so long, please do something, and immediately gets maced in the face.
Because he's a stalker.
Yes. And then final one is the one with like all the artists coming together. It's 8 weeks of eight days of Spider-Gwen, which is just like her busy showing Gwen Stacy has a very busy life. It's like on Monday she has to chase through the city after Stilt Man. On Tuesday she fights snow ninjas. Meanwhile, cuts to the Mary Janes in their apartment having a Hawaiian themed party because it's July. Wednesday she teams up with Spider-Ham.
Okay.
Who is wearing, with Spider-Gwen threatening to sue him for stealing her hoodie. Spider-Ham saying, not my fault, it was cold. So I had to bellow Spider-Gwen's hoodie. Because Spider-Ham's version of Spider-Gwen is a penguin, obviously.
Yes. It actually makes sense as well.
Yeah, like on Wednesday she kind of fights some muggers. No, wait, that's Thursday. On Friday she teams up with Silk and Spider-Woman. I say team up. They have lunch together.
Yeah.
With them bemoaning that Gwen always brings egg salad sandwiches. And also they're in like t-shirts and Gwen is in a gigantic sweater. And just like, I swear it was so cold recently. And now it's boiling hot. Then it goes to Saturday and we find out that George Stacy just keeps making Gwen egg salad sandwiches constantly. And that's why she always has them. Then on Sunday, she wakes up. But surprise, it's not Sunday. It's actually Monday. And she slept through the entirety of Sunday. And has to go out chasing after Dr. Sharktopus.
Oh, I love Spider-Gwen.
Spider-Gwen is really good.
She's one of those unsung heroines of current Marvel. Because we talk about Squirrel Girls and Patsy Walkers and Moon Girls and Devil Dinosaurs all the time. But we often forget Spider-Gwen is still there.
Yeah, just in a corner.
Yeah.
Having her wacky adventures.
The weird thing is, right, because you know I've been reading all these Eastern novels, right? But I've started reading one where the classroom is killed, they get resurrected in another world, and one of the characters in the classroom is actually resurrected as a spider and basically has to eat her way to the top because she's resurrected in a labyrinth full of monsters and all sorts of other stuff, and she has to basically fight and eat her way to the top, taking on the powers of other things, increasing her abilities, that sort of thing. But the interesting twist to this is that she's been helped by a character who is supposed to be God, right? Or one of the administrators of that world, like one of the senior administrators, if not the senior one. And when she eventually makes it back to Earth for a visit, she meets that God. And that God looks exactly like her. And it's only at that point that the twist comes into play. And I thought, what an idea, because you spend all this time thinking that it's a resurrected person, but it's not, because she's the only one who's resurrected as a spider, because that's what she originally was. When everything in the classroom was killed...
She was a spider in the classroom.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, and that's why she was resurrected as a spider. But you spend all this time thinking that she was actually human to start off with.
Yeah, just assuming she was transformed into a spider.
Yeah.
That's clever. I was going to say, like, why is she the only one turned into a bug?
Yeah, but it's because she was originally a bug. And it's just, once that comes out, it's like, that explains a lot, actually. Because the author has done really well to drop hints all the way through that she's actually really just a spider.
See, that is how you do, like, a not twist.
Yeah. We're over time, so...
Oh dear.
We are over time, so I have a choice, and I'm going to let you decide which one. I can do Batman 66 versus meets John Steed and Mrs. Peel, or I can do The God's Lie.
Maybe The God's Lie, since we did get given that.
Okay.
Although we also got given Project Autumn that I haven't talked about yet. And I'm sorry, lovely people who gave us Project Autumn, I will talk about it.
We'll do it next week.
We will.
Actually, we could do this next week as well.
Yeah, well, let's just make next week a stuff we have been given week.
Okay, so... Then we'll end on Batman 66 yes. meets Steed and Mrs. Peel, because, oh my God, it's so 60s it hurts.
Well, yes, we have to, because you need to explain what Vim and Vigor is.
Yes, I do, actually. Anyway, Batman 66 meets Steed and Mrs. Peel, and I'm going to get the gripes out of the way. Number one, I don't like the artwork for this. It basically looks like they've taken stills from the TV shows and cartoonized them, right? But that's the main gripe I've got with it, is just that. The rest of it is just so high camp, it's actually quite scary. You have Batman and Robin, and you start off with Bruce Wayne, and he's at this exhibit, and the exhibit has, you know, all these crystals, diamonds, and everything like that. And then Catwoman turns up with her henchmen, and she's going to steal these diamonds. And as she's going to steal the diamonds, you know, Bruce Wayne is there. He's got no cover, so he can't transform into Batman. Robin and Alfred are in the Batcave. Alfred gets the spare suit because he's going to have to impersonate, and then they're on their way. But who turns up to save the day? Who turns up to trip up Catwoman with an umbrella? But John Steed from the Avengers.
That is a twist I did not see coming.
Yeah. And so John Steed and Mrs. Peel turn up, and Catwoman gets arrested. She's in a cell, and everything's hunky-dory, right? Not quite. Because apparently there is a master criminal at work, and Catwoman was working for that master criminal. And so they have to try and find some bait to lure this master criminal out. And so they settle on this massive diamond. And John Steed and Mrs. Peel are here. They work for British Intelligence, and they are in Gotham to basically try and capture this criminal. Batman and Robin decide to help. And so they are introduced to each other for the first time, and Mrs. Peel says to Batman, you know, not many men can pull off a cowl and cape, but a cowl and cape ensemble, but you do it quite well. And then says to Steed, take notes, Steed. And he's like, only if it comes in tweed, which is brilliant. It's so John Steed. And then Mrs. Peel introduces herself. Oh, John Steed introduces himself to the squire to Gotham's Dark Knight, which is the Boy Wonder. And he's like, oh, yes, it's a pleasure. And she goes, so full of vim and vigor. And he's like, well, I guess so. And Batman says, no, no, it's a compliment. It means you're brimming with youthful energy. And he goes, oh, in that case, thanks. Thanks, Mrs. Peel. She goes, call me Emma. He goes, gosh. It's like, oh, it's slightly creepy and camp, and I'm just, I don't know how I feel about this. And then it just gets worse, because all of a sudden you have these cybernauts, or whatever they're called, and they're basically robot men, and they attack Catwoman in the cell, and so they have to stop them, and Batman has a spray can of rust, which immediately rusts the cybernaut, because the enemy of robot men is rust, obviously.
Of course, he just has that with him.
Oh, the other enemy of robot men is other robot men, because Steed and Batman and Mrs. Peel and Robin, they maneuver things so that the other two robot men punch each other out, because it's a thing. But the secret controller, you've already guessed who the secret controller is, because Bruce Wayne was visiting the museum with a woman in a dress so 60s it hurts. The dress is literally, she's wearing a dress that's, you know, that block pattern dress that every woman in the 60s wore?
One of those.
Yes.
Oh, dear.
And it's like a dress and a smock at the same time. So, yeah, I use the word smock as well. Take note, old word used. Anyway, so this basically ends with everything in Gotham has suddenly become foggy, like London P. Super. And Steed says, the weather appears to have taken a turn for the worse. Worst luck for us. Batman goes, this is no natural meteorological matter, Steed. I fear that Catwoman was not the only recruit of this Machiavellian mastermind. And goes on to say, it seems a fellow but fiendish countryman of yours, Lord Marmaduke Fogg, is also on the payroll. And you see a guy walking along with a couple of cybernauts, and he's wearing, you know, one of those big overcoat type robe type things, yeah, with a deerstalker on his head. And obviously he's wearing, you know, the hunting clothes that they used to wear, the hunting jacket and pants, the tweed ones. He's wearing those, and he's smoking a pipe from which is emitting all of this toxic, slightly toxic, green fog-type substance, going, ho, 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 ha, ha. Because that's supposed to be a British laugh.
Two things.
Yes.
Actually, a pipe that emits toxic smoke is just a pipe. That's what a pipe does.
Yes.
And secondly, that's a terrible soup. You're going to be inhaling the fog.
Yes.
Just pick a fog machine. Literally this, the worst possible way to put fog into the atmosphere.
I mean, the thing is, the sad thing about this is, Robin and Batman, they both look exactly the part. You know, the slightly ill-fitting batsuit and the overcompensation in the crotch area, that sort of thing, right? It all is Batman 66. John Steed and Mrs. Peel don't quite look the part because, like I said, it looks like they're basically cartoonized pictures of the characters from the TV series. And so they don't quite look right. But the rest of it is camper than a row of pink tents.
Which is what Batman always was.
And the Avengers to a degree.
Degree is a large degree.
Yes, it is. Thing is, this really should be a marriage made in heaven, and it's not quite. I can see signs of a divorce already.
Oh, that's disappointing.
Yeah. And it's a shame because if ever two characters would work together, then it's John Steed and Batman from the 1960s.
They would go together like peas in a pod.
Well, yeah, the only other character that I would throw into the mix that would fit with them is Napoleon Solo, the man from Uncle.
Well, and the team-up they've already had with the Green Hornet.
Yes.
Which actually, I'm surprised that like they haven't teamed up before, because I feel like the Avengers would be one of those things, like the window gag.
Yeah, but I mean, this is the thing, you know, the Avengers have always been that slightly odd spy thing from Britain that no one quite got when you get right down to it. But I absolutely adore the Avengers. I love the original 1960s Avengers, and oh my God, Diana Rigg. Oh, I had such a crush on Diana Rigg.
I hope I'm to have a crush on Diana Rigg now. She's such a sassy old lady.
I know, but she's always been like that, though. When you get right down to it, it's Diana Rigg, and she could get away with pretty much anything because you just go, Emma Peel, what you gonna do?
I bet she got off so many driving tickets like that.
And when they were doing the adverts for the Avengers, because they were showing them on TV again, it's just that one bit where she just looks over and she's got that look on her face. She goes, Steed? And you just kind of melt a little bit inside and fall off your chair.
And while you're doing that, let's end the show.
Yes. So, I've been Rob.
And I've been Andrew.
We'll see you all again next week with more comic-y goodness. And I'm going to just stop thinking of Diana Rigg now.
No, you aren't.
No, I'm not.
Well, thanks for listening.